Hey, this is Horns Up. I'm Animesh.
And I'm Peter.
And yes, it's time once again to up the irons on Horns Up, for Peter and I are celebrating the 40th birthday of Iron Maiden's second studio album, Killers. Yes, I know we're a few weeks late. The album was released 2nd February 1981, but we're still talking about it in the same month of release, so yeah, cut us some slack. So how are we doing this? Well, we're doing a few facts, sharing a few of our stories, going through all the songs on the album, and then some. All in an effort to try and justify why Killers matters and why it remains relevant even today, like any birthday celebration should.
Yeah, man, I can't believe like Iron Maiden have been releasing music for more than 40 years now. I mean, it's crazy, right? I mean, and especially considering the whole thing around Killers, right? Because it's the last album with Paul Di'Anno. So I don't think they realized also what was going to come after this, right? The whole change and just how they would kind of blow up all over the world, right?
Yep. So first, let's start off with some factoids. As we said, released 2nd February 1981 in the UK on EMI Records and on 6th June 1981 in the US on Harvest and Capitol Records. Depending on which release you listen to, you get either 10 songs, that's on the UK release, or 11 songs if you listen to the US pressing. That's because the US album includes a 2-minute song called Twilight Zone. As for band personnel, yes, guitarist Dennis Stratton was replaced by Dave Murray's longtime friend and way more competent and, dare I say, progressive guitar player Adrian Smith. That's the only lineup change since the band's debut album, which means Clive Burr is still on drums. And yes, as you mentioned, Paul Di'Anno is still on vocals.
As for history, well, Iron Maiden's debut album, the self-titled one, had strapped a rocket to the band's back, enough for critics and fans to build expectations for a stellar second album. So armed with Adrian Smith, the band heads off to Battery Studio in London with ace producer Martin Birch behind the boards. It takes the band a few weeks to record the album, and once it releases, it manages to spend a good 8 weeks on the UK charts. Now, that's more or less the key facts. So Animesh, let's straight get to it. Tell us about your first experience with Killers. How deep were you into Maiden's discography when you first heard it, and what did you make of it?
Okay, this is an interesting question. Now, I'm one of those guys who first got into Maiden albums by listening to Brave New World. Okay, yeah. So that was my first exposure to Maiden, and it's a story that I've told before. Following Brave New World, the next album I heard was Dance of Death. And it's only after that I started listening to the earlier albums. I didn't get to Killers, or Iron Maiden for that matter, because of the Bruce Dickinson love.
Yeah.
Of course, that had a lot more to do with, you know, how I was introduced to Maiden. And when you are introduced to Maiden by Maiden fans, largely, you're told, hey, you should only listen to the albums that have Bruce Dickinson on vocals. But after checking out Rock in Rio, I realized that I really liked The Clansman and Sign of the Cross, which weren't Bruce Dickinson vocals on the albums on which they were released. So I decided to check out X Factor and Virtual 11. And despite what critics say, despite what fans say, I still think those are good Maiden albums. So that made me want to check out Iron Maiden and Killers. So guess what? When I first heard Killers, I didn't enjoy it.
Yeah,
it didn't sound like the Iron Maiden I knew and loved.
But
I recognized some of the songs because, as I said, Rothschild, Killers, Purgatory, I'd heard on the live albums. And so I was happy enough to have heard the Origins as such. But it was only much later. And by much later, I think that's like, what, 10 or 11 months later when I started playing the bass as such. And I had it in my mind that I would try and learn each and every Maiden song, that I went back to Killers to study the bass lines and to study the songs and try to play them. And that study is what eventually helped me listen to the album with an open mind. And from then on, yeah, I wouldn't say I'm a hater of the album. So that was my introduction to Killers. Peter, what was yours?
Actually, it's very similar because I think I've said this in one of the earlier episodes that we did. For me, I started off actually with Power Slave, and that's why it's like my favorite Iron Maiden album of all time. And a friend of mine had burnt a CD for me, and that time, like, CDs were so rare that, you know, I listened to that back to back. So hence I know note for note the entire album. But yeah, I think it was just primarily because I would say that, you know, you didn't have that much access, right? This is before torrents and all of that. So when you have to choose, I think I remember listening to Seven Son of the Seven Son. I think I bought the CD much later. I remember listening to Best of the Beast. Remember that compilation?
Yep.
Yeah.
So with Virus.
Yeah. I remember listening to that. So, it's similar to you, I also had that, you know, Bruce love, as you put it. And no one really tells you that, hey, you know, this is also something that you should check out. And I think, if I recall really well, I saw Ratchild live first before hearing it on one of the compilations. Wow. Or anything else. And, you know, Bruce totally owns it. Yeah, I mean, Bruce Dickinson totally owns it when you see, and this was 2006. So I think it's only once I had one of those times where I was like, okay, let's go through the discography and all of that. And I'm not surprised that you said that, you know, you didn't like Killers at first, because I was like, wait, this is the same Iron Maiden that now I have seen, or the same Iron Maiden there. So, especially the start, right? Because the vocals are such a integral part of the Iron Maiden sound, right? It just takes a bit getting used to, I feel, Paul Di'Anno. And of course, so you've got Steve Harris writing a majority of the songs, right? And especially on this album itself. But yeah, it was, I would say, like, quite interesting. And it kind of makes me wonder also sometimes, right? I mean, what would it be like if you still had Paul Di'Anno on most, I mean, who continued with Maiden, what would that be like?
Interesting questions. But anyways, let's first dive straight into the album. Let's try and wrap our heads around that. And then we'll come around and discuss the album in more opinionated form a bit later. So we are listening to the UK 10-song version that clocks in at just around 38 minutes. And the album begins with Iron Maiden's shortest recorded song ever, The Ides of March. Now, here's my question. Would this instrumental fit anywhere else on the album other than the opening slot?
I don't think so, man.
Yep, I think not too. And of course, Maiden haters and fact lovers will quip that the song is nearly identical to Thunderburst by the band Samson, which featured at one point in time Bruce Dickinson. Yeah, so it has a lot going against it, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think, like, if you don't have it back to back with Ratchild, it just doesn't fit in, like, and it just kind of sticks out, right? I mean, 90 seconds of almost 100 seconds of a song, like, what's happening, right?
Yeah. It's weird to say the least. As an instrumental ditty, it's okay. As an album opener, it's on the weaker side. Which moves us on to... Yeah.
The staple at most Maiden gigs, and that's the one I saw, at least, the energetic Ratchild.
Yeah. So, okay, go back and listen to the opening of Ratchild, okay? Is it just me, or does Paul Di'Anno open the song as soon as the guitars come in with a bleh? Can you hear that? Have you heard that?
Yeah, now that you say it, yeah.
Now, so I weird, right?
And now I can't unhear it anymore.
I absolutely adore Ratchild because of its bass heavy intro. It's perfect to start jams with. Even if this song began the album, I wouldn't complain. I wouldn't miss The Ides of March. And I think that this song may have been a better opener than The Ides of March. And that's also partly because Diano sounds so fucking good on this song. And all his vocal hits that pepper the song, he truly makes it his own. I'll say it, I think I enjoy, or I've grown to enjoy, this studio version more than Dickinson's live versions.
Okay, that's a tough one. But yeah, I mean, it like I said, right? I mean, it takes a bit to get used to. And I think once you warm up to that, I totally understand why you would like the album in terms of the bass, because for me, that also stands out. And, you know, like this was the single of the album, right? That they promoted.
Yeah, one
Yeah.
of them.
Yeah, one of the singles. So it totally makes sense. I mean, of course, this is like strange because now you have like the radio standard being a 3 minute song and all of that, right? And this is far before that. And it gets everything in that short 3 minutes. So you have like everything that you would expect. So, yeah.
I think Rothschild is what, the fourth shortest Maiden song ever
Yeah.
to be recorded. Something of that sort. Anyways.
And there's a reason why they still play it at gigs, right?
Of course, it's a party track. It's the one to just get your up the irons on.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving on. Next up is perhaps the freshest song to make it to Killers at the time of it being recorded, Murders in the Rue Morgue. Freshest because barring Prodigal Son and Murders in the Rue Morgue, all of the other songs that appear on Killers have been with the band for a long time. Now, Murders in the Rue Morgue is again, it's a classic Maiden track, but the calm and melodic opening to the song is radically different to the latter part. And dare I say, again, I think this would have been a fantastic song to open the album with because you wouldn't need something like an Ides of March on the album. Imagine Murders opening the album. It would give something new as such to the Maiden catalog at the time when it was released, right? And it's a fantastic, underrated song.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, right, you have that like over a minute of like intro that goes in. I kind of found that better in a way to Ides of March. But it's such a contrast, right? The way the song starts and when it goes. And, you know, for people who like know Iron Maiden, like, or at least people like me who listen to like most of the classic Iron Maiden stuff, right? I was like, wow, this is so different. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I find a bit, and I understand why sometimes they kind of classify these the first couple of albums as kind of like punkish. Would you agree?
Yeah, definitely. It has more of a British punk kind of an energy and a vibe. The drumming has that effect too. The riffs aren't your standard, traditional, stereotypical galloping riffs that Iron Maiden have come to be known for as such. There's a lot more going on. There's a lot more variety in terms of what the riffs and the bass is doing. But at the same time, the song structures are, you know, they seem to be coming from a mind that's locked into only that song structure kind of a scenario. You know, it's weird. Killers has this weird, you begin to see some of the experimentation that Iron Maiden is
Yeah.
known for, but and Murders is a good example of that. But at the same time, it's like, you know, we're just testing the waters, trying to do something new, but we don't know if we can pull it off yet with full conviction. Having said that, Murders is still a really good song. I'm surprised why it still isn't played a lot more live, because even live, the song would slay. Like, think of it as a perfect showcase for Steve Harris. I mean, with the intro and stuff, you know, as a way to bring the crowds back up from. Say, you know, after they've played maybe the Red and the Black or something.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, moving on to track four on Killers, which is Another Life. That's kind of the same thing I feel, like I said about Murders in the Room org, right? I mean, the intro kind of confuses you, right? And you're not sure like what's coming next. And then you get like, you know, the familiar kind of Maiden riffs that you later on later albums, of course, love. And of course, then again, the bass, man. The bass again stands out on this track. I'm sure you'd love playing along to this track, right?
Yeah. I mean, I did. What you said about the intro is absolutely right. You wouldn't think it's an Iron Maiden song if you only heard the intro section, right? It's pure drums, and that too in a very tribalistic fashion. But I must admit, and I don't know, this is a bit of a downer or something of that sort, but I always tend to confuse Another Life with Innocent Exile, as in I can't like hum them on command as such, and they don't stay with me. And once both the songs end, I immediately forget them, which are not great signs for both songs. But while listening to the songs, I always think that they're decent. The only thing which I truly remember, like which absolutely strikes me about Another Life, is the fact that there's only one verse. And that verse is just repeated thrice. There's no chorus. It's lazy lyric writing.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of very, I don't know. I mean, the way I kind of look at it is that, okay, what's really going on here, right?
It's a weak track. You have to say it.
Yeah. I would agree to that.
So let's move on to the album's second instrumental. The only Maiden album that has two instrumentals as such, which is Genghis Khan. And man, what a ripper of an instrumental this is. So many ideas, so much going on. It's busy as fuck. And it really showcases Clive Burr's phenomenal playing on the record. It also gives us a chance to talk about Papa Roach. Do you know where I'm going with this?
No, but do I want to?
Which is your favorite Papa Roach song, Peter?
There's only one Papa Roach song I know.
Which is? Isn't that riff sounding so familiar to the riff from Genghis Khan that begins at around 146?
Wow. I put that, at least when... Now I can't unhear it again. Oh, God.
Now imagine Papa Roach vocals in place of Paul Di'Anno. No.
For me, for some reason, it's totally right what you said, right? There's so many ideas in that short track and there's so much going on. It's like, I don't know, one of those bands. It's like you could have basically broken down the riffs and made like two or three songs, right?
Yeah, just like Papa Roach.
but coming to the riff that you're talking of, I don't know why, it reminded me of, you know, the opening riff of Run to the Hills.
Okay.
So, I don't know. That's what I thought. I mean, I guess because I was still thinking Maiden, but Papa Roach, wow. That's a good one.
Okay. Run to the Hills begins very differently. So, I don't know how you heard that, but yeah. Okay, fine.
All right. Now, next up is the often underappreciated Innocent Exile.
Underappreciated, yes. That's an absolutely apt word, especially with my confusion with Another Life and Innocent Exile. Yes, that bass intro is marvelous. It follows a stereotypical Maiden formula, which by now it tends to get a bit repetitive. But hey, it also has a fantastic Di'Anno vocal hit towards the end of the song. Another blur. Yeah, I'm a sucker for good vocal hits.
But you can actually tell. I mean, like there's some songs where, like, especially now that we're coming to the second part of the album, you see a bit of variation. Like initially, my only grouse with Paul Di'Anno is that, you know, he just sticks to a certain style. And then, like, you think that, okay, that's how he's gonna, or how the rest of the album is gonna be. And then the second part of the album, or side B, you're just like, okay, is this the same guy kind of thing, right?
That only happens on one song that'll come up in a short while, actually, when we'll come around to discussing it. But yeah, I think that's enough on Innocent Exile, right? Do you have any other points to add on to this?
No, not really.
Okay, cool. So let's move on to the thumping title track, Killers. Not gonna lie, one of my favorite songs by the band. It's iconic. It's you show me a metal musician who hasn't tried playing the song, and I'll dare you to find one. Guitarist, bassist, drums, vocals, everything's perfect. One of the best Maiden songs ever to be recorded.
Yeah, but I mean, this becomes the Maiden, or this is the sound that Maiden everyone enjoys and loves, right? I mean, you've got the solos in there, and I actually like, coming to the point I made earlier, right? I can't believe that Paul Di'Anno like pulled off the vocals on this track. I was just like, wow, like this is like what I want to hear, man. Or this is what I enjoy, right?
See, now when you look back at Killers after having heard Bruce Dickinson on some of these tracks, and you hear these songs with Paul Di'Anno on vocals, I still think that on the studio versions, Di'Anno performs significantly better than what Dickinson does on the live versions. And I know that's almost a blasphemous comment for many Maiden fans as such, but these songs have been written with Di'Anno in mind,
Yeah.
right? So he tends to excel when it's this fast-paced, punkish kind of a vibe,
Correct, yeah.
which kind of disappears from Maiden's catalog later, because now they're writing songs with Bruce Dickinson in mind. And a good vocalist, and Dickinson's a great vocalist, will obviously be able to adapt the song to his voice as such, which he has done fantastically. But yeah, to me, I still think Di'Anno on the album is better than what Dickinson does live for these songs. Maybe a couple here or there, like if you stay take Iron Maiden from Iron Maiden, I think Dickinson's better on that. But yeah, controversial opinion. Fight me on that.
Yeah, like I can read it. I can totally hear like people like, what did he say?
Yeah, but then coming back to Killers, I think Killers itself is a fucking excellent tune. It's one of these songs where Adrian Smith stamps is like, "I have arrived," right? That both the solos are fucking fantastic. And yeah, that intro opening, it took us weeks to kind of try and figure it out, but the part I'm talking about, the part where the guitars are going, "Tee-er." Yeah, but then when we realized that, we were like, "Holy fuck, it's just that simple." Whatever.
All right. So moving on. Now, if you listen to the US version, then you'd hear the track Twilight Zone, but we're not. So we get to hear Prodigal Son.
Is this Maiden's most un-Maiden song ever?
Dude, I don't know, man. Like, what's bad about the placement in a way is that it's right after Killers, right? So you're just like, huh, what happened? Or that's exactly like how I felt, right? I mean, although you get that great solo in the middle of the song, but yeah, I mean, if I played it to someone else saying that it was another band from the 80s or so, yeah, you could kind of pass it off that way, right?
Yeah, like which other Maiden song would you peg as the most un-Maiden song ever? I mean, even something like Journeyman. Do you remember Journeyman? That's the acoustic song,
Yeah.
right? Even Journeyman sounds more Maiden than this song. So the question is, why do you think Maiden decided to record this particular song, because this is one of the only other fresh songs that have been written for this album, apart from Murders in the Rue Morgue? Was it them trying to experiment? Was it them trying to maybe go out on a limb and showcase a different side? Was it their attempt at a Nothing Else Matters? Maybe. Even though Nothing Else Matters would only be released 10 years later. We don't know. I would love to talk to Steve Harris and try and figure that one out. But does it belong on Maiden's Killers? We don't know, right? I mean, yeah, we would tend to think, of course, with hindsight talking.
Yeah.
We would tend to think it shouldn't, but it's a decent song. It's just not Maiden enough.
Yeah, I mean, having said all of this, right? I mean, I would love to be like transported back to like, say, 25, 30 years ago where you only had, imagine if I started off listening to Iron Maiden with Killers, I'd be like fighting you, like, how dare you say that, right? But again, we both have listened to Iron Maiden in similar kind of circumstances, right? So that's why we have, I guess,
yeah,
opinions.
For all you know, in a parallel dimension somewhere, Maiden goes on to write more songs like Prodigal Son, and we'd all be heralding Prodigal Son as the first of its kind.
True, true.
Yeah, after this, Maiden would go on and cut their hair and, like, I don't know, release something like a load reload.
I was going to say grow their hair out and become a hair metal band.
Okay. Fine, maybe that works too. Anyways, moving on to the penultimate track, which is Raw Maiden Energy. It's Purgatory. This is a raw, rough Maiden classic. It could have been on Iron Maiden as well. It perfectly suits the vibe of the band at that point in time. I have nothing more to say.
Man, this is again, you know, the punkish side of Iron Maiden that makes me just like wonder, right? Sometimes, like, hey, what if they continued with this style? Like, would they actually be, you know, I'm sure they would have been like as well known, but they would have kind of, I don't know, got a complete different sound, and or maybe you'd have like hundreds of bands trying to replicate this sound. But I like this guitar parts at the end of the song because like it starts off like that punkish part. But the guitars at the end is something that I really like. And I'm realizing that it's all, like you said earlier, right? The Maiden that I love, I'm looking for those parts and cherry picking out. Like, yeah, this is what I'm really liking.
Okay.
And finally, the album closes with another underappreciated gem, Drifter.
Yeah, I've heard plenty of people say that Drifter is the most underappreciated song that Maiden's ever released. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, again, putting it in the context of the album, this is, again, I like this track, but you again see, you know, the galloping bass that you'd like slowly become more prominent on later material. I like the guitar solo that comes in also. I wish now I could like kind of make my own edited version of Killers or reorder the track, something like that. I don't know, but
yeah, I agree with you. I'd have Drifter a bit ahead too, and maybe have Prodigal Son close out the album.
Yeah, I mean, it, you know, of course, now we're listening to it on, you know, say CDs if you've heard it, or on streaming, right? So you can actually make your own playlist and all. But back then, this is how you heard the order. And one thing also I just want to add, right? If you notice, the side A are all the shorter tracks of like 3 and 4 minutes. And you have the longer songs on side B. I don't know if that was like by design or... It's just like when you look at it now, you're just like wondering. And those are one of the few questions I'm kind of left with after listening to the album, right? And especially looking back at it all these years later.
Okay, cool. So let's try and make sense of what we just heard and talked about. What's your take on the album musically? Where would you rate it in the band's discography and why?
If I have to like look at the band's entire discography, I would say somewhere in the middle, man.
Okay, so which albums would you rate below it?
Oh boy. You're not gonna like this, but I'm not like a huge Blaze Bailey fan, so those
That's
albums.
okay. I
I
understand that.
don't know. I enjoyed, like, of course, and I'm again, this is might be a tough take, but I'd rather take this over Dance of Death and all of that, dude. I don't know. Now when I listen to it, I just can't, because some of the stuff like Maiden released later on just became like very bloated in a way, and probably it's me also. But I'd love to, like you say, hear an EP or like a 30 less than 30 minute album of just like punkish stuff like this by Maiden. I don't know. That's
No,
just
you're
me.
better off listening to Paul Di'Anno solo stuff.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, what about you, Animesh?
Okay, tough question. Musically, Killers has a few stellar songs, right? And I don't think anyone can disagree with that opinion. Rothschild, Murders in the Rue Morgue, Genghis Khan, Killers, Drifter. It has fantastic production. Everything sounds super rich and clear. And you can see why the band continued to work with Martin Birch. He truly does justice to Maiden's unique sound. And, you know, it kind of sets the sonic template for what the band should sound like. The album also brings Adrian Smith to the band. And though he has no songwriting input, the solos shine. You can tell that Smith has a personality of his own. And it's a personality that somehow complements Murray. And it also fits into the band's dynamic. So I think Maiden have found the best guitarist that they could ever find, apart from Murray, of course. Clive Burr and Steve Harris are in ace form. And dare I say, this album makes me want to hear more of Burr. I still think, you know, Burr with Maiden for maybe a couple of more albums longer would have given us a more powerful sound than McBrain on drums from the next album onwards. Now, those are all the positives as such, but on Killers, you also begin to see the cracks in Maiden's armor. Di'Anno's range and style is very limiting, right? And there doesn't seem to be a lot of thought from the lyrical front either. Also, bring in the fact that most of the songs on Killers have already been with the band for a long time, so it's kind of safe to assume that the band has almost exhausted its all its material on the second album itself, and they need something new, and which is why maybe you get to see tracks like Murders in the Rue Morgue or even A Prodigal Son, which are pushing towards a slightly new direction. So to sum it up, I don't think I can place Killers in my top five Maiden albums list. It's not a must-listen album. It isn't the album to introduce someone to the band with. But is it a Maiden album that deserves a revisit now and then? Yes. And that's only to reacquaint yourself with the songs and, more importantly, the production. So, what's the final word on Killers then? Is it an album that deserves to be celebrated or not?
I mean, for all the positives that you said, right? If you didn't have Killers, you wouldn't like have all the, you know, classic Maiden that you have. If they didn't do all that experimentation on this album, you wouldn't have. I mean, we were talking like, what would happen if, you know, Paul Di'Anno continued on vocals? What would Maiden sound like? Hey, man, what if Adrian Smith didn't join the band? That would be like something else completely, right? So that way, there's a lot going on this album, I would say. And yeah, like you said, I would revisit it. So definitely, I think after 40 years, especially when you look back, and hey, you know, the production-wise, that's something that they consistently go back to, right? I mean, they are locking in on their sound, if I may say, or getting in that sound. So yeah, that's what I would say. What
Okay.
about you?
I definitely think this album needs to be celebrated. Maybe not musically, but because of other factors. First up, the artwork. Killers looks fucking great. I think it's by far the best Eddie ever. The colors are just right, the illustrations spot on, Eddie looks menacing, punkish, and downright fun. It sets the benchmark for the band's visual identity, and we all know how much the visual identity matters to a band like Maiden.
Yeah.
And for Maiden's growth. That itself, by the way, is a whole podcast on its own. So major, major, major kudos to Derek Riggs. I tried to reach out to him for this episode, but alas, didn't happen. Maybe another time. Second, as I've said before, the album sets the sonic template for Maiden. Third, it's the album that helps the band get its first US shows. So with all that it's done for the band, you have to acknowledge and celebrate its place. Without Killers, you wouldn't have had Maiden's story be the same.
True. And, you know, talking about the US tour, I was looking it up and they actually toured with Judas Priest. Imagine, like, early 80s Judas Priest and Iron Maiden. Damn, that would be like some shows to catch.
Exactly. That was our celebration of Killers. What do you think? Do you agree with us? Do you think that we don't know our Maiden? Tell us. Go ahead, up the irons and tell us. We are at hornsuppod.com. We are also on Twitter at hornsuppod. I am at Azmohani.
I'm at Trendcrusher.
This is Horns Up.
Horns Up, guys.